You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Your mother was a hamster, and your father smelt of elderberry!
I am your father.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 2 of Sharp Angles. I'm Rich Haywood. Today, I'm still the fanboy. I'm here with...
Jeanette DeLouis, and I'm still the neophyte.
And Danae Haywood, and I am the novice.
All right. So, in case you guys missed it or need a refresher, Sharp Angles is a show where three people sit down and watch a movie of, you know, varying degrees of, I guess, expertise in the movie. Sometimes you'll have a fanboy that knows everything, like, you know, has watched 8 million times and is crazy about it. You'll have a novice, maybe saw it a couple times, and then a neophyte that's never seen the movie before. And then sometimes it'll be a little different. Sometimes we'll have all have never seen the movie, or have all seen it just a couple times, or mixes in between. But, you know, it's kind of a roundtable discussion. You know, kind of got born out of a wish for one fanboy to have a neophyte watch a lot of Marvel Cinematic Universe films. And here we are again with a second installment of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is Iron Man 2. We just got done watching that. And, you know, as we did before, well, I guess we'll have like a little round table. We'll go through, see what the neophyte thought, and then the novice, and then I'll wrap it up as the fanboy, see what I actually thought of this viewing. You know, maybe some surprising conversation will happen. So Jeanette, what'd you think? Iron Man 2.
I really liked it. There was some element of it, and I can't tell you what, I'm desperately trying to think. But there's some element of it that makes me not quite like it as much as Iron Man 1. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, very entertaining. I loved all the snarkiness, great action scenes. And yeah, very enjoyable movie. I would watch it again in a heartbeat.
All right, cool. And if you were to take a guess, because I think this is maybe where we're going to get into this a little bit. If you could take a guess of what that one thing about the movie was, could you maybe, like, you know, iron it out and kind of,
yeah,
you know, and see what it might have been?
I actually don't think that this was what made me like it a little, like, very minuscule amount less than Iron Man 1. But honestly, and I know that someone certain is going to take issue with this opinion, but Don Cheadle replacing the original actor.
Yep.
I love Don Cheadle. Yep. Don't get me wrong; he's an amazing actor, and especially in Ocean's 11, that series, awesome. But in this, I was not buying him.
You're missing Terrence Howard.
I really was. Saying. Yes. Right. Yes. Also, I think this one was a little bit more serious than the last one.
You didn't buy him as Rhodey?
No.
I thought he was a better Rhodey. I think Terrence Howard...
more serious this way.
Don Cheadle's
more serious? Yeah, Don Cheadle was.
Yeah, his character was definitely, like, rigid and through the road. He acts very much like he knows Tony. You know, obviously, they have history. They were in another entire movie together. You know, the characters, at least. But he took the friendship a little more, like, in a different direction. Than I think than Terrence Howard did. So, all right, I'm kind of with you with that.
Okay.
But
I like him. I liked him as Rhodey. I think Tony needs somebody to keep him under wraps.
And Pepper can't do it for him.
Pepper got made CEO when she tried to do it. She's got no control. She's got the guise of control. Man, even Black Widow, who we're introduced to in this movie, can't do it. She gives him free rein to do whatever it is that he wants to do at his birthday party. No, I love that he put on the suit. I love that he kicked his ass. I think Don Cheadle is Rhodey to me. Like, I do. I have a hard time with this movie, though. I will tell you, I think Mickey Rourke stinks. And as Jeanette pointed out multiple times in the movie, he doesn't look Russian. He doesn't really sound Russian. I think it's weird that he has a thing with a bird. And I want to, like, I don't... I like Tony, but I don't like Tony in this movie. I don't know. I'm not...
Wait. So you think his character was different in some way from the last movie?
Yeah. I think that he's a tool bag in this movie more so than in the first movie. Like, you see the character development. You see him start to... I mean, he owns the fact that he's Iron Man at the end of the movie, but you see him start to sort of realize that there's a world outside of himself in the first movie. I really think that. Like, I see that a little bit in him. And... then
he but as he points out in this movie, though, Danae, he's dying. So isn't that an excuse to, like, you know...
But he takes it all
break
back.
Down a little bit?
No, And
I actually don't believe that. I'm just playing devil's advocate to irritate you.
I mean, maybe in Tony Stark's world it is, you know, and spoiler alert, yeah, he finds a way to not die and then everything. But you never see him go circle back to that. To that place where he's realized that there's a world outside of himself. It really is still all about Tony Stark. And it gets under my skin a little bit. And yeah, so he and Pepper have the big kiss, the smooch that we've been waiting two movies for, right? That you mentioned never happened in the first one. But I just want to punch him in the face. I really do. And I really like him in the first movie. Like, I do. I think he's an ass. But, like, and I want to punch the guy who
Hammer.
I want to punch him in the face, and I really want to punch Mickey Rourke in the face just for being Mickey Rourke. And I don't know. I have a harder time. Like, I will tell you that it had been a long time since I had seen either of these movies. My butt was glued in the seat for Iron Man 1. I, honest to goodness, I don't know that I got up at all during that movie.
Yeah, I don't know.
I got up 6 or 7 times during this movie, and I have a hard time sitting. You know, I'll admit that. But,
but it was not as riveting.
It was not, yeah. And I, you know, I think I was expecting, like, to be annoyed by Mickey Rourke. So I was. And I think this is at least my third time seeing it, you know. And I think the character of Whiplash is sort of lame, to be honest with you.
But I still maintain that he had an awesome name.
I agree with that. I agree with that. And yeah. I also think that Vendetta was not... I mean, I get it, but it wasn't fleshed out. Like, there wasn't that build up that you get in Iron Man 1. Like, it's just so anticlimactic. Even the last fight where it's like, oh, you hold out your hand and I'll hold out my hand and we'll explode the dude, you know? And then
a Wonder Twins combined.
Right, yeah. Captain Planet, all the rings, you know?
Right.
We're not really, it's like, that's a great analogy, actually, and it makes me, it just annoys me, actually, I don't know. And I think, too, so Iron Man's such a great way to start. Iron Man 2, you have Mickey Rourke.
You're going to bring up Thor, aren't you?
I so am!
Oh my god.
She hates Thor,
and
hates it.
And we're going to go to Thor. And like, I'm dreading. I have a pit in my stomach about Thor. In fact, we have a drinking game planned for Thor. So there is a possibility that the next podcast we won't be so coherent for.
That is true. All right. So, I mean, I mean, getting way ahead of ourselves, we're talking about Thor. I definitely will authorize the use of any imbibing to enjoy or not enjoy Thor as we get to it.
Abs.
I mean, I won't be enjoying the abs, but... You know, there will be apps.
And plenty. Natalie Portman's stupid face, will you enjoy that?
I mean, she's so wooden.
Okay.
So, all right.
I have a question. So on a scale of 1 to 5, what would you rate this tonight?
This movie?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
No, I want to hear your rating first. I don't want to color your... I mean, I know...
I would give it, like, a 4.2, I think.
4.2.
Okay. 4.2. Right. Yeah. Whereas the number
Iron
one was 4.5.
4.5, yes. If you recall.
First. Yes.
Yep.
I don't remember what I rated Iron Man. I might have rated it a 5. I don't know.
I mean, I don't think you went that high, but you did call it a home run. I don't know. I think you went in high fours.
High fours. 4.75 maybe. This one I'd give. A generous 3.
Dang.
Yeah.
That's a woof.
That's even, I'm feeling generous by giving that 3. Like, that's, you know, I'm leaning more towards 2.5. I don't like this movie. I just don't.
Okay.
I'm a little bored by it. I'm a little disappointed by it. I think Tony's still Tony, but, and I think he's funny. And I think there are lines of dialogue that are funny, but there are more of those. Like, we talked about, like, one or two misses in Iron Man in the dialogue, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was, like, that one moment where Pepper's like, how are you going to get in there? And then, you know, as Jeanette pointed out, like, there was no need for that. But I think,
it was
like,
stupid.
Right, here we have hemorrhoids, like, a line about hemorrhoids that's meant to be funny and it just falls flat.
Yeah, that's
we
true.
Have a couple of lines. I think
Pepper, it was not a line, but Pepper standing there looking at the bomb
right.
about to explode in the one droid was just stupid.
Right. And waiting, basically, essentially, for Tony to save her is just annoying. And I think in the third one, we might get Pepper wearing the suit. I believe, again, spoiler alert.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, well, we'll talk about that in a couple minutes, but...
but I find her even more insipid in this one than she was in the first one. As a CEO, I don't feel like she... Like, she doesn't have the chops for it. She's, you know, like, and...
I feel as if you are being... Well, here, I'm just going to say this. I feel as if you're being a little bit harsh on this, possibly because we are moving on to Thor.
I don't know, though. I really had a hard time sitting through this movie
okay.
for the third time. I did. I tried on a dress while we were watching it. I came and I showed it off. Like, I was missing my device that I usually sit with, you know, and it's charging right now, so I was missing my phone. Like, I was just not entertained.
Yeah.
You know, and the booms are big, and the you know, Tony is very funny. But also, I will say, I think they cram too much story in this. It's too long. 2 hours, for me, was, like, too long to sit for this movie. And
I mean, you know, there's in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, 2 hours is like... Even, I don't know, I would say that would be a sweet spot as far as time goes. But I cannot understand why the 2 hours in this particular movie felt long.
Yeah, it does feel long. I don't know. So that, I don't know. So if I'm being generous, I'll give it a 3. But really, I think right now I'm 2.5. And maybe if we had watched this out of sequence, I would have given it slightly higher. Maybe I would have given it a 3. Just can't, I don't know. I'm just having a hard time. Thor might be biasing me more. I don't know. And we get and that's our parting shot is the build up to Thor
right.
at the end. You mm-hmm. What's his name goes to New Mexico. There's a giant crater in the earth, and you see Thor's hammer, and like you know what's happening. You know what's
right.
coming.
Right.
You
know, yeah. Yeah. That was the I don't know what they call them, the bumpers or you know that your tease for the next. For the next movie is that scene where you see Mjolnir. Is that how you pronounce it?
No.
I don't know.
It's like picking out a dress for my sister-in-law's and brother's wedding. It's not something I want to do. It's something I have to do. You know.
You better hope they're not listening.
So yeah, I mean that's an adventure in and of itself, I guess. But yeah, so. You know, impressed, maybe not so impressed, and, you know, with the fanboy, I guess, I'll come in around, I don't know, I'll give it a 3.75. I'll give it a 3.75.
I think the other thing is I really thought that I liked this one better than Iron Man 1, because when we were talking about it last time, I was like, oh, I think I liked it better.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we sat down to watch it, I was like, oh, no.
Yeah. Well,
and I think that's the other thing. I think that's the other thing that's biasing me is, like, I thought I was going to be like, oh, yeah, this is great. And then I'm like, oh, wait, it's Mickey Rourke and a parrot or a cockatiel or white
something.
Some kind of
it's
bird.
It's really strange. Like, the bird, like, make the bird a character. Talk to it. Like, that's great. Like, if you can build, like, some character
sure.
with something that doesn't talk, I think that's fantastic. In fact, there's a show on TV right now that does that with a dog, Mike and Molly, we've been watching. And Mike's mom has a dog, and the dog is a character in the show.
Right.
Like, and the dog, like, builds the character development for the others. Like, that parrot had nothing to do except show that he liked a bird, and he
right.
wanted his bird.
And it wasn't even the right one.
Right, and yeah. it wasn't even the right one, and he still got an attachment to the bird.
Yeah,
and
like, he didn't go, like... You know, execute somebody to go
right,
get his
right.
bird. You know,
he
like
sort of did. I mean,
sort of. It was like it's not the right bird or whatever. You know, but he didn't really put up that much of a fuss. You know, if it's like, it's not the right bird, you know, it's like, oh, well, who cares? You know, it's a bird. You know, and then, you know, right then and there, he just drops the other guy. You know, like, let's say, we're painting, obviously, a hypothetical picture where this scene doesn't exist. He drops the guy right in front of Hammer, and he's like, it's not my bird.
Right.
And then, okay, I'll get you your bird.
Right.
And then you have this, like, some scene where some dude is, you know, back in Russia, you know, combing every street or whatever. I mean, it could be a throwaway scene.
Right.
Maybe making this movie a little too long, and maybe Favreau decided, all right, maybe he shot the scene and it didn't make it into the cut because it was going to be too long. But I agree with you.
But
I absolutely agree with you.
Then there's that scene with Hammer where he comes in and he takes his shoes and takes his pillows and he takes... First of all, that didn't make any sense to me. Like, I took your stuff and I'm mad. Are you mad?
It's I took your stuff.
Right.
Because I'm showing you that you took my stuff.
Right.
This is what happened. I invited you into my home,
right,
my base, you know, of operations, and you took all my stuff, and what did I get? Nothing.
Right.
So
right.
I took all your stuff, and what do you get? What are you going to get? Nothing. Right. You're not going to get anything because, you know, like, I'm the authority figure. Because
right.
he's got a little Napoleon complex.
Sorry. Well, but he's basically a prisoner. So he's done, I mean, he gets a bird and a couple of pillows and some shoes.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I think we can all agree that the parts with Mickey Rourke or what Whiplash, they're just not all that compelling.
Right.
They're not that compelling. They're not that explained. They're just kind of there.
Well, right. And I think that's what I was afraid of.
Right.
You know, that we were going to come to Iron Man 2 after watching Iron Man 1, and then I knew going in because I'd seen the movie a whole bunch of times. I knew that there was something that was off, and I had, you know, my strong suspicion, which was confirmed, was like, it was the villain. The
right,
villain
yeah,
just has
right.
no teeth,
right.
You know, like, okay, he's a force to be reckoned with, because he's just as maybe, but they didn't even really do that, maybe just as brilliant as Tony, you know,
yeah,
has the talent to create something, but then, you know, he shows up, and yeah, there's a lot of cool CG, and there, you know, he does this thing where he's got the electrified things. He ties Tony up twice, you know, in the same movie with the same moves. And it's like, okay, I get it. You know, you can electrocute him through the suit or whatever. But you know, like, why isn't there like a devastating thing like that? All right, so let's go to the beginning of the movie, right? And you see the Monaco scene. Right, and he comes in, and he's like tearing apart cars.
Right, it's awesome.
And
like, that part is awesome.
He's a force to be reckoned with. He gets to Stark's car, he cuts the engine in half. He goes flying. Tony finally, like, you know, gets his stuff together. There's a really awkward scene with that Rolls Royce,
yeah,
and Pepper and the bodyguard, and they're like ramming him with the Rolls Royce, and then all of a sudden he just cuts part of the car in half. And then he's like, you know, whizzing around, and he's
so,
missing.
Right.
And I'm like, how do you you don't
so
miss.
Sure.
You're like
right.
in this sense, you're developing for the audience that this is the evil of the movie.
Right.
He needed to do something. Pepper didn't need to be in that car.
No.
All right. The bodyguard maybe didn't need to be in the car. Some Stark Industries, like goons or whatever, needed to be in the car because Natasha Romanoff. Or as
Black
Natalie,
Black
Natalie,
oh, yeah,
what do they call him? Natalie Silver, I don't know, Silverman,
I don't even remember.
Whatever fake name they gave Natasha Romanoff for Black Widow is, you know, the character we're talking about. She needed to intervene and put goons in the car.
Right.
Stark goons in the car.
Right, with the suit.
With the suit.
Well, and it's
you know,
way
and they're like,
too
you know, and then, you know, like, get, you know, like, and maybe she didn't need to know about the suit. We're like, you know, go get him. You know, go be EMTs. And then Pepper and everybody could be like, oh no, what's going on? It's like, no, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. I'll get the EMTs. Maybe they're EMTs and not Stark. Maybe they're Stark EMTs. Who knows? But they needed to show up there, and the suit needed to be somehow in the mix. Jarvis might have known and somehow snuck it in there. Or the suit was, you know, inexplicably magically appears inside the Indy
the
Indy
car.
And or Formula One car, whatever it is. but that needed to happen so that you know, Ivan can show up and destroy that in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like maybe even kill the guys. Mm-hmm. You know, right, because you need to show something of like some kind of force. Like almost nobody died. You know, I don't think anyone died.
No, race car drivers.
The race car drivers might have died.
Totally died.
They didn't say anything about it.
There was like explosions.
Tony survived. Yes. You know, but there, you're right. He does explode. Like
there was like five cars.
There's like that big. The one car turns around, and then they all like sort of pile in, and then then there's the gas and. You see the explosion. You can see Whiplash coming out with his electrified and the cars behind him. So maybe the race car driver died. Yeah. But that's the other thing is Tony doesn't... There's no cost to him. There doesn't seem to be any impact. Even when 7 or 8 or 9 race car drivers... It never gets mentioned. It never gets mentioned. And, like, so either they're inconsequential or they didn't die or we don't really know.
They died. No, they totally died. There's no way that a non-superhero could have survived those explosions.
And so we get nine Formula One drivers who don't make it.
Right.
And nobody mentions this. Nobody mentions the carnage and the destruction that happened in the first movie.
Well, and all those spectators just standing there watching it instead of running away screaming was a little unrealistic.
The things that we get for references to the first film are we get the Senate unhappy.
Oh, right. Unhappy.
We get the Senate. They're unhappy with Tony Stark because he's holding a weapon that they believe is a weapon of like mass destruction, but they don't call it a weapon of mass destruction. By name, but they heavily imply that he is holding basically a weapon that a superpower should have, but he's just one man. And, you know, of course, Tony just thumbs his nose at everybody. He's like, well, you can't have my toys because they're mine.
Right.
And
he's kind of a brat about it. I mean, he's funny. You sort of feel like, okay, maybe he's a little justified in this, but he's a brat. And, like, that's...
He's a brat, but the government is infringing. Patented rights.
You're right about that, and I'm not... But there's a way to say that, and I'm not saying the government should get the suit. And they ultimately do. I mean, Rhodey shows up with the suit. He commandeers the suit because he and Tony get in a fight, and he storms off like a brat.
Right. And, this is laying some, in my opinion, some pretty awesome foreshadowing for what happens next. Like, what we're going to see in a correction from last episode on May 1st instead of May 2nd. You know, this is some pretty interesting foreshadowing about what's going on.
Right.
Because we haven't gotten to Iron Man 3, and there's a big part that plays between, you know, like, United States and military affairs and Stark Industries and S.H.I.E.L.D. and all this crazy stuff.
Right.
And China, which is weird. But
well, minus China, you could say the same thing about Winter Soldier.
Well, again, yes, yeah. So it's starting to tie together. But I mean, when we get to the culmination that is the end of Phase 2, which is the Age of Ultron movie.
Okay.
It's like, you know, it's all about it. You know, I can't wait to see like that part because those kind of stories like really interest me because it's like it's the kind of like. It's that story that is the world is in super grave danger, and it's because of somebody's brilliant mind going a little too far and coming back and biting them in the ass. So like it's cool. I like to see how the hero characters play that out, and it'll be interesting to see Tony's reaction to what's going on. You know, but it depends on how they tell that story too.
Right.
So you know, and again, the events of Iron Man 3. Withstanding, because we haven't gotten there yet.
Have you seen it?
Well, see, here's the interesting part. So, yes and no. Like, I've seen most of Iron Man 3, but not all of Iron Man 3. So
That really surprises me.
In that sense, it's one of those ones that slip through the cracks. Just like Thor, the Dark World, also slipped through the cracks. I haven't seen that one, actually, at all.
I think that one was better than the first one.
And it was supposed to be really good, yeah.
Hmm.
So, you know, in a sense, like, I'm going to become the neophyte as a super fanboy of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So that'll be pretty interesting to see.
How many movies ahead is that one, just out of curiosity?
Well, we've got it's Iron Man 2, Captain America, or Thor, and then Captain America.
So we have two and then, snoozers in a row.
And then the Avengers.
I don't mind Captain America and then, so much.
Okay, I've heard that it's rather boring and slow. It's
not fantastic. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely not Iron Man. We're going to sit through Thor and it's going to be painful. My goodness. And then we're going to get to Captain America and you're going to be like, oh, this is better. Or at least I'm sure that's the way the arc's going to go. And I like Captain America. I like Captain America for myriad reasons. But I like Cap because he embodies America. You know what I mean? Like, he's patriotic and the transformation.
He's a good boy.
He is a good boy.
Unlike Tony Stark.
And the transformation from, like, this, like, skinny, scrawny guy. It's very interesting, actually. The storyline is a little compelling. But again, there's another villain. I mean, not to get ahead of ourselves, but I think we talked a little bit last time about the villain not having teeth. Like you get this very physically imposing, this very physically scary villain that doesn't really have, you don't really have this, you don't feel that sense of terror. You don't ever feel, like, I didn't ever feel in this movie like Tony was truly in danger.
Oh my word, okay, yeah. since you brought that up, can I just say, mm-hmm. those droids were pretty much useless.
Right.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
I mean, two men took on, what, how many droids were there in that last fight scene?
There were
at least a dozen.
Was it eight. So it
was 9, 9, and 9.
Oh, alright.
They did
three
nothing.
Rows of three. Right, they had... They could fly, they had guns, but they were useless paper. You know, like, by the time the suits took care of things, and, you know, you get a couple of ha-ha moments because Rhodey has a few of the parts of the suit that hammer outfits that don't work, and you get this funny moment, and then Tony comes in and he saves the day or whatever, and you get the sense of Tony being... He's never really in danger.
No.
You don't ever, you know, like, even when Whiplash gets his hooks around Tony and the whips around Tony, like, he doesn't short out the suit. There's no moment of panic. There's no loss of control. There's nothing.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, like, precipice that he's about to fall off of.
Right.
There's not that suspense. And like you were saying, like, it's very similar in Captain America. I guess Winter Soldier is different. And very different. Yeah. I didn't want to see it because I was worried about, like, that
so precedent.
Good. No, it's good. You know,
it's
so
good.
So I'm going to be the neophyte for that one.
Yeah.
It's like a 6 out of 5. My God, I love that movie so much.
Rich liked that movie a lot.
So good.
I would give it a solid 4. I'll have to watch it again before I give it an official rating.
I think that's what's disappointing. Like, you have this fantastic team of writers, right? You know, they're very talented.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. You know, and obviously, what's his name? I can't remember the guy's name.
Who?
It was Tony Stark. What's his name?
Robert Downey Jr.
Thank you. I almost called him Harry Connick Jr., but like, not the same people. I know
that. No, he was an Independence Day.
Also a fantastic actor, but they have the same number of syllables and a junior after
that's
their
names. That's true.
Very confusing. They should change that.
I know, they should. But you get that, you get his, I mean, I feel like he's just good at being that character. Like, he is Tony Stark in a lot of ways.
Yes.
You know, he's an alcoholic, he's an ass, he's a playboy, he's, you know, he's all of these things.
I have never been a fan of the actor, but oh my word, he does such a great job being Tony Stark.
Well, and you know what? Because of him being Tony Stark, I think that, like, Robert Downey Jr., the man, has come around.
Yeah.
Hmm. You know, like, he's done a lot of really awesome stuff. He's done a lot of, like, community outreach stuff. Like, I actually just watched a video in between the watching of Iron Man and this recording of this podcast, where he goes and he goes out to visit a young boy who needs a prosthetic. So the team over at Disney, because they were tied into, you know, like, the, I
make
guess
a wish, maybe?
Make a Wish or some, you know, some other organization, they get together and they make a working Iron Man prosthetic for this kid.
Oh my word.
And Robert Downey Jr., as Robert Downey Jr., shows up dressed as Tony Stark to deliver it to this kid.
That's really cool.
That's awesome.
And then the cool thing is, you know, like, they have a moment where he's, like, putting, you know, they put the prosthesis on the kid, and it lights up, and it moves, and his arms, and like it, the fingers actuate, and you know he's able to like put his hand out, and the palm lights up.
That is
and he's
cute.
Like really really cool, like he's like you know like amazed by it, you know. And then there's like a you know kind of like a touching moment. He's a young kid, so you know so Tony, the Tony character of Robert Downey Jr. He just shows up and he starts talking like, you know, hey, we're from Stark Industries, had some really cool stuff. I want to show it to you. Maybe we can compare, you know, compare notes. And there's two cases, and one of them has his prosthetic in it, and the other one has a mock-up of, you know, his Iron Man costume. And he puts it on, and then he's like trying to like, you know, like do, he's moving it, and then he like goes to hit the button, and he's like, well, it's not really working that well. You know, what about you? And then he's like, you know, the kid does this, and it lights up, and you know, immediately works. And he's like, yeah, well, yours a little better than mine.
That
you know,
is and, awesome.
And then you know, the producer has asked the kid, he was like, who is this? And you know, the kid responds like, oh, it's Iron Man. Mm-hmm. And Robert, and you can see the joy in Robert Downey Jr.'s face. He's like, yes, you know, that was cool. Like he, you know, he gets it. He's a fan. Like, mm-hmm. And this is something that I like to do. And I was like, you know what? That's really cool.
That is cool.
You know, I like the fact that he's doing like that stuff.
Right.
You know, like regardless of whether or not, in fact, you know, maybe he walks out and then, you know,
gets paid
his check and he goes home and he's like, you know, doing whatever he does with his life. You know, that's not cool or whatever. But, you know, but at least in that moment, you know, he does stuff that's, you know, he's not a movie star that just locks up. He's like, yeah, yeah, I play this part, and who cares, and I don't want to do it anymore. Give me more money, you know.
Right.
So
that's very cool.
It is pretty cool.
And I think that that's a good thing for him. I'd like to see that more in Tony Stark, and maybe we will. I mean,
yeah.
In the Avengers, I can't remember, so I saw the Avengers once. I remember liking it. I know you didn't like it.
I only watched the first 10 minutes, so... Yeah.
We're going to have to fast forward the
first time. Well, I mean, I don't know. I think we're going to go, we'll go through, and I swear, I stand by it. If you're going to get through Thor, and we're going to watch Captain America, and now you've already seen Iron Man 1 and 2, and you're going to watch the first 10 minutes of the Avengers, and then you're going to start to see it. You'll start to see those puzzle pieces just fit right in place, and goes click, 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 mm-hmm. click, click. And then you'll go, okay, I get it. You know, it might be to your point that you don't. No one ever needs to watch the Avengers or care about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because it took you to sit through 4 movies to get the first 10 minutes of this film, and I understand that.
It's a brilliant marketing strategy, though.
Yes, but it's, to me, it's seeing the fact that someone cared enough about a piece of paper with some pictures on it. You know, these comic books. They cared about these things enough to draw out a plan that's going to take 20-something years to complete and literally serialize movies again. Like, back in the old days where there wasn't television, you can see these stories just go, and you had to wait because you want to see the you know the next person that was going to get introduced or the next obstacle that this team had to go and face. And like, it's cool. It's cool to see that stuff come back.
And it's respectful, too. Like, mm-hmm. you know, and little known fact, or perhaps that Jeanette and I are both writers. And, well, better known fact about Jeanette than me, that we're both writers. And to see something that's been written, and obviously illustrated, but painstakingly, both of those things, you know, done for this piece of artwork, that there's a respect paid to that, you know, to see these arcs immortalized, not just in print, but in a good, if not great, storytelling method that people want to see. You know, like, that's, as authors, I think the ultimate goal, if a movie is made, is to have it be respectfully made.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that these are a work of honor for this print, you know, medium, that mm-hmm. that these, you know, maybe not Iron Man 2. I'm not, you know, I think that they could have given Whiplash more teeth. And I have not read the comics, so I don't know much about Whiplash and his powers of destruction and evil. But I think that villains in these comics are meant to be fearsome. And I think that you get that sense of terror and dread in the first one, and maybe not so much in this one. And maybe that's why I don't like it. I like a good villain.
Oh,
like,
good villain.
Yeah.
It helps. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. It helps make the whole entire storyline.
Right.
Let's face it. I mean, there's no hero if there's not a villain. Simple
right.
as that.
Well, and look at what happens in other forms of like science fiction and geek like nature, not straying too far away from the Marvel universe or even the DC comics universes in general. But look at something like Star Trek, right? And all the memorable movies have memorable villains.
Yes.
You know, the number one, you ask any Star Trek fan, what's the number one movie in the Star Trek universe? And they're going to say Wrath of Khan.
Right.
You know, and maybe now the newer fans will say, oh, I really liked Inner Darkness, or I really liked the Star Trek J.J. Abrams reboot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the original one. Because Eric Bana's character was fearsome. He had grave power,
yes.
and was not afraid to use it. In fact, did.
Right.
You know, and that was crazy. You know, and then...
Well, and then you get Khan, who's like this super villain.
Yeah.
And he's like...
And yet has such depth.
Right. And mm-hmm. has an incredible amount of depth. And there's a part of me, and I mean, there's always
Are
that...
Are you going to say that almost roots for him?
Yeah.
And I think that was intentional.
Absolutely. And like, there's that... And then there's that piece that you get that really, from the beginning in that movie, and maybe that's another one that we can talk about and do, but from the beginning of that movie where he saves the girl's life and at great cost to other human lives, but he makes that trade for that little girl's life, and the father's willing to do that, and many, many innocent bystanders lose their lives in the process, to be honest with you, that, you know. But you get the sense that he cares about that one child to some degree or another.
Oh, I don't know if I'd agree with that. That's an interesting assessment.
I own
the movie, so I can just go
and
watch it.
He uses the means to an end, but there's that sense that, and later on in the movie, he says, these people are my family. He acknowledges he picks a family and saves a family or part of a family. And I see that connection, that depth in that character. And, like,
yeah.
you know, and they could have done that in this movie because
yeah,
at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, and they start out the movie with the villain and
right.
yet don't develop
right,
him
Right, don't
at
develop
all.
Him. You
yeah.
know, like, again, that toothless nature, you get this dying, vodka-soaked man whose son is.
With great witty lines, though. I still like the snark.
Well, at the beginning.
Oh, okay.
No,
okay,
you
sorry.
Talking
yeah.
No,
yeah.
you're talking about. Yeah. No, I'm, you know. No, in fairness, again, they run on a very, very similar course, and so you get this dying vodka-soaked man in the beginning, whose son takes it. You know, it's a revenge story. You know, as old as time. Let's face it, as
right.
old as the Bible. Revenge, you know, Cain and Abel, and
but even the revenge has no teeth.
It doesn't.
Yeah. You don't get a flashback scene
right.
of Howard throwing
no.
Anton.
Yeah,
you don't get him throwing him out.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that was filmed and cut or something like that.
But
it
gets explained
what
two thirds into the movie.
Yeah,
two thirds
yeah.
into the movie with a newspaper clip and
right.
some Samuel L. Jackson action that he may or may not have needed.
Yeah,
like I mean, again,
well, I mean, you needed. All right. Well, this is where I'll disagree with you as the fanboy here. You need Samuel L. Jackson. You need a S.H.I.E.L.D. presence. You need all of that stuff.
Sure. Because
it's building blocks. You need to know, you need to understand. I mean, it's very apparent, but you need to understand why, you know, Natasha Romanoff is there all the time
yes.
doing all the stuff. She didn't just appear because she's a pretty face. You know, like so she gets her big scene where she goes and like wastes
she
all those
scoffs.
Dudes over at you know, at Hammer Industries because, you know, oh, okay, cool, this is what S.H.I.E.L.D.'s about. You know, S.H.I.E.L.D.'s about, like, getting the job done, you know, they're a Black Ops crew, all right, cool, I get it. You know, so, but you also need that Fury-Stark connection, and I think you also need the Fury-Stark nod. Like, you know, hey, I worked with your dad, and your dad said these things about you, so, you know, like, hey, without saying it, without going outright and saying it, you know, I don't want to see you throw your life away. Because he was really right there until that scene happened where he opened the box and he saw that stuff and then he sees the little clip of his father saying, yo, Tony, you know, I'm basically saying that you're the reason why I'm doing all this stuff. And you get like the little click in Tony's character, and he does start, you know, taking things a little bit more seriously, and he figures stuff out.
Can I just say though that the father angle I thought was very underdone. Also,
I would agree. And I'm a crier, flat out crier in a movie. Doesn't matter whether it's happy, sad, scary, I will cry. And I don't remember. Full candor here, I don't remember whether I cried. Like, these are supposed to be emotional moments, yeah. You know, this moment where his father tells him, you're my greatest creation, and whatever. Like, these are supposed to be have some emotional depth, and
because there wasn't anything the other way.
Right.
You know, you don't feel anything for the villain's father because the villain's father was in there for 5 seconds.
Yeah. Right.
And like, okay, yeah, well, you know, Howard Stark was the bad man that wronged my dad. And you find out, like, you know, he's basically an arms dealer, and, mm-hmm. you know, he did all these awful things. So, I mean, there's no motivation, you know, other than the fact that it's just family revenge, go get mm-hmm. what belongs to us, that Ivan is doing anything in the movie. And that's why I feel that the character had no teeth. That's why I feel that he had no power. And, you know, and maybe that's why he didn't give him any in his actions. But
it
hurt the story so much.
He calls Tony and he says, everything that your father took away from me, or you took away from me, I can't remember, I'm going to take, for the last 40 years, I'm going to take away from you in 40 minutes. But that's not true. I mean, so he builds his father's whatever Stark Village or Stark City or whatever it is in Queens and Stark Expo and mm-hmm. all of this. And yeah, the drones show up and they blow the crap out of it. But the reality of the situation, it doesn't take anything away from Tony. Like, you go after
Tony
Pepper.
Has unlimited funds.
Right, he has unlimited funds. You go after Pepper, you go after Rhodey, you go after the bodyguard whose name I don't know.
Right.
That's taking something of value from him. Taking away something that he has. He doesn't care about the bystanders because 9 race car drivers, you know, snuffed it in front of him. And, you know.
He did, however, in Tony's defense, take all of, 5 seconds to not only save that little boy, but congratulate him on, like, you know, stepping in and with his awesome superpowers.
Right. And maybe that's the moment. Like, maybe that's the moment where you go, oh my goodness, is that little boy going to, and let's face it, a little boy's never going to snuff it. Yeah. You know, you can see
not
it.
In one of these movies.
Not in one of these movies. Yeah. No, because, you know.
Which I'm just, fine with, just for the record.
Oh, yeah, totally. I have a hard time. Please, don't misunderstand me.
Yeah,
it's
no
awful,
killing.
Awful.
No
when,
killing little kids.
Yeah, no.
Small children.
In the Marvel movies.
Yeah. Because there have been times where I've watched something and went, you know, that can't happen, and then it does, you know? And
like, so, Hunger Games.
Don't even get me started. can't do it,
We
folks.
Should totally watch those movies tonight.
It'll be you and Rich, and that's it. And then and you can call in a ringer for me.
Oh my goodness.
So, I was so traumatized by the first book, I can't watch any of those movies. Can't do it. So anyway, this is why I guess I'm being a little harsh. I'm harshing on your mellow.
It's all good.
I want a villain. I want a villain that I root for a little bit. I want a villain that you understand the motive. And, you know, I want a villain where I sort of go, hey, and I want somebody who's powerful, because then that's when you feel like somebody, like there's a righteousness, for lack of a better word, there's a righteousness in defeating a villain that has power. Mm. Like, you defeat an easy villain, so what?
Yeah. Again, the villain makes the hero.
Right.
Yeah.
You're right. Absolutely right.
You know what's really ironic about that statement?
What?
Because that's exactly what we're about to get.
What, in Thor?
Okay.
Because Loki is a fantastic villain.
That's true.
That I don't think they pay enough attention or care to the hero.
His hair really irritates me, though.
It's like, it's in reverse. I can almost say that we might have the opposite end of this argument.
Okay.
Drunken or not, when we talk about Thor, when we see it. Because I think Loki is a fantastic villain. He has fantastic motivations. And gets not only his day in this movie, but he gets the chance of, you know, like that villain that you're going to see again. you know, right, and then he was like, oh, I'll get you. And then, well, he's back. He comes, you know, you skip a movie, mm-hmm, and then he's back.
That's true.
You know, because he's the central villain in the Avengers.
In the Avengers, yeah.
So you'll get to see, like, those, all those things, mm-hmm, clicking in place,
that's
too.
That's true.
So, I don't know. I think, you know, I don't know. Thor still sucks. It's so bad. And
well,
I don't
here's
like
the,
it.
But here's the problem. I will tell you what the problem with... I'm sorry. Jeanette has a neighbor that we're trying to be considerate of.
I don't know why. Because she's never considerate of me, but...
We're here at our other remote studio here in Baltimore.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you why Thor sucks. And I'm going to be very honest with you. I'm serious about this.
Yeah.
So Kenneth Branagh, who has directed many, many Shakespearean dramas and comedies and those sorts of things.
He was also Hamlet.
He was also Hamlet. But he also... Yeah. Was he Hamlet?
He was totally Hamlet. No, he was Hamlet.
Mel Gibson was also Hamlet.
Everyone's been Hamlet.
Everyone's been Hamlet. But he might have directed the Mel Gibson version of Hamlet, too. In fact, check there. I'm not 100% sure. But he's a Shakespearean actor. And he also is a Shakespearean director. My one of my most favorite movies of all time is actually Twelfth Night, and Kenneth Branagh directed it, and it's fantastic. But he takes this story that's sort of, I guess, a little touch medieval, because let's face it, Thor is a Norse god, and the storyline dates back way before any of us were born, you know, way back to the annals of time, really, in Norway. And they've modernized it, and they've made him something that's fearsome and whatever, and it's him and his hammer. And they put somebody who's used to directing Shakespearean dramas and comedies.
Which is a completely different genre.
And a different base. And he tries to make it something it's not. He tries to make this story it's not. What's the matter?
That man directed Wild Wild West?
No way!
He totally did.
Oh, that movie was so bad.
Well, this is why I'm telling you.
Hamlet?
Hamlet.
Hamlet we're talking about?
Yeah, Hamlet. So,
Wait.
Although, you know what? Honestly, I can't blame him for...
He was Hamlet in 1996.
Hamlet. Yeah. But then Mel Gibson was also Hamlet, and I don't. Mel Gibson was Hamlet like 2 years later, in like 1998 or something. It was.
I can't blame Branagh though for Wild Wild West. That was just bad all around.
Oh,
with Will Smith.
With Will Smith. It
Will
was
Smith
terrible.
And what's his name?
Yeah, not Tommy Lee Jones. That was the other one. Yeah.
How did he direct himself?
I've never understood that.
Kenneth Branagh directed himself in Hamlet.
I've never understood that.
He didn't direct the Mel Gibson version. I am corrected, but he did direct himself in Hamlet. So I knew he directed a Hamlet. So you take this man who's done really wonderful Shakespearean films. Wonderful. I mean, really.
And Wild Wild West.
And Wild Wild West, which was...
Well, he was just in it.
He was in it.
He was just in it. He was an actor.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, that was a correction.
Gotcha.
But you put him in... You take him and you say, all right, this is yours... And he takes this very Shakespearean sort of attitude about it. And in some ways, actually, you might be able to draw some parallels to Thor and Hamlet. Because, let's face it, Hamlet is a whiny-ass baby for most of the play. And
he's a spoiled prince.
He is a spoiled prince. And that's sort of what we get with Thor. And so he's taking what he knows and he's trying to make it relevant. And the reality of the situation is he doesn't. And when you do a Shakespearean drama or comedy or tragedy, you're looking at these actors and it's more about how they impart language than anything else. And so maybe that's why Natalie Portman is an appropriate choice, because she's so wooden, but maybe her, I don't know. I'm not sure, but that's ultimately the core of the problem is they picked the wrong person to direct this movie from the title.
Right.
You see the ending of Thor, and you look at it, and you get this very flourishy, very, very dramatic.
That's true. That's very true.
Credits, like the credits are flourishing, dramatic, and you're like, what the hell? And then you see Kenneth, directed by Kenneth Branagh, and it all made sense to me at that point. I was like, he was the wrong guy for the job. Yeah. And that's ultimately what the problem was. Now, I don't know who directed Thor into whatever.
The Dark World? Yeah. It was not Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
He
didn't get tapped again.
Yeah, and he might not ever get tapped again. Because I mean, I don't know if it made enough money or not. I mean, it made enough money. They made more of them.
I think a lot of women went to see the abs.
But that's really the problem there. I think if we had gotten a different director, someone like, I mean, I hate to do it because, you know, but he's fantastic. Like J.J. Abrams.
And you're going to say him.
Like, he just a fantastic director, very modern, would have been a better choice. And we can talk more about this after we're drunk and talking about Thor, but I might go on about how Kenneth Branagh should stick to Shakespeare. And you know, and I'm calling it right now, folks. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, and this other director that directed Thor the Dark World is it looks like it's a breakout direction. Okay. He that was his first cinematic film.
Okay.
Like, you know, his first actual, you know, non-TV episode, you know, but he's done work on Lost and Boardwalk Empire and Game of Thrones and like that kind of stuff. So the guy's got chops. So, you know, I don't know. We'll see what happens when we get to the Dark World, because again, I haven't even seen it either. So,
alrighty.
But let me ask you: the person who directed Iron Man 2, same person,
Jon Favreau. Yes, same.
Same. And same did director. He do?
Did he do 3? Iron Man 3? I don't think he did actually. That was. Let's see. But you know, as we're going through, you know, and looking back at Iron Man 2 and then, like, I guess branching off into all the pieces and everything, let me ask you an interesting question. So Iron Man 2, does it belong in the Marvel Cinematic Universe? Is it a necessity? Do you need Iron Man 2 in order to understand what's going on?
Well, I mean, he does perfect his core.
His new heart.
Yeah, his gadget thingy in his chest.
Yeah, he discovers the element that, you know, basically saves his life.
Yeah.
But I wish he had gotten a heart when he saved his own heart. Like, honestly, like, he was giving up and he was giving things away, and it was classic, like, you know, he knew he was dying. It was almost a suicide, like he was giving up. And he came back to life to some degree. And so he perfects his core, and we get that story. I just wish it was a better story. I think there's some place.
But I do have to say, considering all the bunny trails we've gone off of, and I love our bunny trails, don't get me wrong, but that wasn't the question. The question was whether it belongs in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Do we need it? Is that the question? Yeah. Do we need it?
Yeah, do we need Iron Man 2?
I don't know. I'm going to let somebody else answer.
Right. Well, but I'm don't think I'm the person to answer this one, because I don't know everything that comes after. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to say no, though. I'm going to say that this is a story that they created to fill up time between movies. I think that might be what happened here.
Yeah.
And you get a roaring big explosion, you know, blockbuster film, and it made a crap ton of money.
It absolutely did.
You know, but I don't know that we needed it. I don't know that anyone would have realized that there was a problem with Tony Stark's original arc reactor.
No.
Had this story not happened. No. If you know,
I was surprised by that angle.
Right. And, like, because it's never mentioned in the first movie. Like, that's never mentioned. The only time you get a taste of the fact that the palladium is a problem is when Ivan says palladium poisoning is a terrible way to die. I didn't know palladium was poisonous. They make rings out of it.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Oh, and them coming up with a new element also, that kind of irritated me. I'm just going to say.
Well, I mean, I guess. I mean, I'm not too down on that, because, I mean, his father actually discovered it.
No.
And he just, like, left him, I don't have the tech to actually build this, but here's my discovery.
No.
So go ahead and make it.
Eh.
So,
well, and the fact that he made, like, an atom reactor out of a bunch of bombs and
oh, is that what those were?
But Tony Stark's got a little MacGyver in him.
He
made the first suit out of his own weapons.
That's true. I'll give you that.
And it was very, very much like a callback at that point.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, his life maybe, well, no, his life literally was in danger. He was going to die if he didn't do this. So.
Yeah, and I will say that, you know, it provides a little bit of depth of character. He will roll up his sleeves, and he did all that work himself.
That's true.
You know, like, he rolls up his sleeves, and he does the hard work when he has to. So I'll give him that to some degree. You know, he doesn't always come off like he will, but he does. So, all right, I'm a little less down on Tony in this movie than maybe I was previously. But I don't know. I don't know that. Yeah. What do you think? Do you think we need it?
I mean, as a fan, I know we need some of it, but I don't think we need all of it.
Right.
And what the weird thing is, in Iron Man 2, we don't need Ivan.
No.
We don't need the villain.
No.
Mm. You know, this could have been, I don't know, a short, a TV movie or something like that.
Or
that had some kind of, like, power play between the Hammer Industries guy and Tony, and it could have been in maybe an hour or an hour and a half, and you could have told that whole story, the conjoining, you know, all those conjoining forces with S.H.I.E.L.D. and you know, the introduction of Cheadle's new Rhodes or Rhodey, and you know, you can tell him dying, all that stuff would have actually been a great short TV.
And, an hour and a half movie would have been perfect for this. Like, I feel like I wouldn't have been as bored. And to be honest with you, what would have been better about if they had redone this movie, and it could have been a theatrical release, would be the primary conflict between the two friends. Like, that would have been a better story. Mm. You know, because
Between Cheadle's character, between
Rhodey
and
Stark.
And Stark, yeah.
Because that is what's going to build the character. Like it's sort of a given that Rhodey gets the suit. Like, there's nobody makes a huge fuss about it except Pepper, and she doesn't have any teeth either. And so, like, a better story would have been the conflict between the two of them.
Yep.
You know, and one of those stopping points, because the best part of the movie, let's face it, is when Rhodey puts on the suit and they have that massive blowout of a fight in the middle of Tony's birthday party. Like, that's the best part of the movie. That's the most climactic, because you have to wonder how deep the waters of resentment go between these two men, but, you know, and how far they're willing to push it. And
how is it going to get resolved?
And how is it going to get resolved? That's a much better story. And having Rhodey take the side of Hammer Technology, having him sort of get swayed only to come back to Tony's side would have been a much better story.
When he realizes maybe they took it too far, and this guy's like, doesn't actually know what he's doing, he's just snake oil salesman.
Right.
And
taking the suits and making drones, you could have had all of that without Whiplash. And that would have been a great story.
Okay.
I think that would have been a great story.
This
is just okay.
All right, so then in that sense, like, you know, I'll stick with my halfway. I know it's a cop out, but I'll stick with my halfway answer. You need the Rhodey. You need the Rhodey. You need the S.H.I.E.L.D. You need the more of Tony.
Sure.
You do not need Whiplash, Ivan, his father,
and S.H.I.E.L.D.
Nothing.
S.H.I.E.L.D. could have come in, like, now I'm rewriting it. S.H.I.E.L.D. could have come in because they don't want the government to have the suit, and that's a problem. And so
I thought S.H.I.E.L.D. was an offset of the, like, Black Ops up.
Well, they are a clandestine organization, but they have no affiliation with any one government.
Okay.
They are just the S.H.I.E.L.D.
For some reason, watching Winter Soldier, I got the impression that they were somehow affiliated with the U.S. government.
They talk to the U.S. government more than they talk to any other government because their base of operations just so happens to be in the United States.
Of course.
And of course, most of the people came up from the United States. Tony Stark is
Thor.
Citizen. Of course, Captain America is America embodied by crazy experiments you'll see later. And Thor is just crazy. And then, you know, Dr. Banner is a scientist in California or New Mexico or wherever he is. But he's an American.
Yes.
So
Natasha Romanoff is not.
Yes.
Right. Romanoff isn't. But
what about Hawkeye?
Although she certainly sounds like an American.
Hawkeye, I think, is an American, but I don't know. We'll get to Hawkeye later.
Jeremy Renner.
Yeah. That's a great line in the new Age of Ultron trailer.
Uh-huh.
Oh my god! All right, that might kind of sway me to, like, becoming a little fan of Hawkeye, because I did not like his character in the Avengers.
He's kind of a dick, though.
It was crazy.
He is kind of a dick. He's like Robin Hood meets, like, Tony Stark meets. He's just not a nice guy. Like,
But I mean, he just, like, nothing. nothing to speak of, though. He just is really good with a bow and arrow.
Right. And he doesn't have too many lines. And,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
But he's not like the guy you want to take home to mom. And
yep.
So.
I don't think Tony Stark is either.
No. Yeah. You don't want to bring him. But
mom would not approve.
No, you take him other places.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely.
But anyway, so, I mean, that's, I don't know, I think that's a pretty good discussion of Iron Man 2,
yeah.
You know, leading up to the moment we're all dreading, you know, this episode 3 is going to be a doozy, folks.
I'm not dreading it at all. I mean, the alcohol sounds awesome.
So, I mean, you know, as we're wrapping it up here, we might start, you know, talking about, you know, what do we want to do for Thor? Do we want to actually, like... Do you want to just go full on drinking game and
yeah,
you know
I'm
like
down with that.
And,
yeah.
and do it?
Yeah,
I all think right. every time he does something bratty, you take a sip or a shot or something, and then all you're right. pretty
I'm
much dead by the end
so,
anyway.
Well, and because of the way that we have to do the podcast, we're going to be doing partially remote, partially partially like you know I'll be in the studio with this gear, and then I'll be looping you guys in. So. I don't know, like, I almost want to see, like, what live reactions are to the movie. So we might try an experiment where we might record live watching.
We're going to do commentary? Writing commentary?
Maybe. We might try that with Thor because, you know, just to keep it interesting, just to see what happens. And if it doesn't work out and you listen to episode 3 and it's, you know, just like the other two, then you'll understand that it didn't work out. But we might actually try it. I mean, throw it out there. I mean, if you guys are interested and you're like, you know, you totally should do this because, you know, Thor is going to be amazing when you guys drink every 5 seconds, then write to us, still at rich@baconicecream.com. Of course, the email address is live, so please send comments, questions, suggestions, hate mail, whatever you want, to rich@baconicecream.com. I know I promised there was going to be like a sharp angles at something, but you know, we'll get to that, I guess, by next time. I was contemplating possibly doing some split URL kind of weird thing, but it actually hasn't come together with our domain providers yet, so that'll be in the mix. But we are officially live on iTunes, so please rate us there. Go to iTunes and look up Sharp Angles. Download and subscribe, please. Subscribe. Can I say that again?
Subscribe.
Subscribe to Sharp Angles Podcast and rate us on iTunes. You know, click the little stars and you know, hook us up with some. You know, maybe 5 stars would be nice. It'd be kind of cool because we're cool people, right?
You're totally.
Like, you like listening to this? I mean, if you've gotten to you know 1 hour 3 something minutes. Or 2 something minutes that you're listening to episode 2 and you've already gotten through episode 1, you know you like us.
You know, come on.
How could you not?
What's
not to love?
You know, and then you know we'll see about all the other stuff. You know, I don't know too much about the whole social network angle, but you know we'll see if maybe we can get some other stuff kicking around and if this live commentary thing actually is a cool thing and it works. Then maybe we'll get you all guys involved in case you want to be involved later. So more to come on that kind of stuff. But for now, we watched 2 of the 5 Phase 1 movies in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And we're going to come back at you next time with some Thor. So look forward to that. But until then, I'm Rich, still the fanboy. And
Jeanette, the neophyte.
Danae, the novice.
And we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening, guys.
Bye.
Bye.